thought he was a chicken. You don't love the prawn.
He has feathers. Prawns don't have feathers.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Prevention Nation,
where we believe education and awareness can change the culture of violence. I'm Caitlin Wagenfield.
And I'm Roy Letts.
Welcome back to Prevention Nation. It's Caitlin, Abby, and Roy here, and we are going to be talking about a little bit of a medley of things, but we're going to start with It Ends With Us.
Oh boy.
What about It Ends With Us?
So, I will admit, I am definitely a chick lit fan. Chick literature.
Oh, okay.
Colleen Hoover, chick Lisa lit. Jewell, okay. People like that.
The easy reads that like aren't very intense. Well,
well,
this one is, but stereotypically aren't very intense. Just easy reads.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And It Ends With Us is a chick lit book.
Well, the first half is definitely.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Which she kind of does on purpose. I think. I don't know. I'm not.
So you read the book,
but. Yes.
And then did you also see the show?
Not yet. I was waiting until it...
You haven't seen it yet?
No.
Okay,
because
so
of
we
all
have...
the scandal
oh my
when
God.
It came out.
No, you're
and...
crazy.
Okay, so we have a real mix here. So Abby's read the book, but hasn't seen the show. I've seen the show, haven't read the book. And Caitlin, I'm assuming with the book reader you are, you've both read the book and watched the show.
So not only did I read the book like originally, but before I went and saw the movie, I read the book again.
No kidding. Of course
so
you did.
Silly.
Okay, so...
It's my homework.
Wow, we have a really diverse perspective on what this story is then.
If you just see the movie, you don't get, like, any of the story, unfortunately.
Great. My input is worthless.
Well, I just think that, like, the way that they went about creating the movie and telling the story was poor. And then it later came out that the director, which there's, like, drama with this, too, like, Justin Baldoni, he wanted it produced and, like, written a different way. And then scenes that he thought were really important got cut because of, like, just... politics on
different
set
about creative people. Differences.
Yeah, creative differences.
Okay.
So I really think the movie would have been very different, and even better than the book in a sense if it would have been the way like the creative direction of Justin Baldoni. But that is not what happened, unfortunately.
See, you literature fans, no offense, but I'm going to go off on a tangent here. You literature fans always do this. You always say that the book is better than the movie, and there's all these criticisms of what the movie should have had in it, but. There's never criticisms of, oh, the book had too much and nothing in it. There's never criticisms of the book, but that's just me. That's just my perspective.
I have so many criticisms of the book, actually.
Okay, okay.
Just the fact that it's kind of cringy.
Okay. Well, let's jump into it then. What's cringy about it? What was cringy about the show? What was good about the show? What?
So, I mean, what did you like about the book?
So, like I said, I think just because it follows that... formula. I know Colleen Hoover has this whole formula and she gets knocked for it a lot, but to your point, when you just want to devour a book and have that kind of mindless reading experience.
I don't want to think. I'm trying to escape from, I work in a domestic violence shelter.
Right.
I'm trying to escape from reality a little.
Right. And obviously with this book, it's gotten a lot of hype and things like that. So I knew what I was reading, that it was going to be about a domestic violence situation. But
when did you read it? Did you read it before or after you started working here?
I think it was after.
Okay, so I read this book when it first came out, and I had no idea what it was about.
Dang.
So when was that? How long has this book been around?
It's been out for a little bit. It had like a resurgence because of TikTok.
Right. I think that was one of those things during COVID or right after COVID when people started making a lot of like book talk stuff. I think this is one of those books that really got... brought to the forefront.
Yeah, so Colleen Hoover, she's been like a published author for a very long time, but because of book talk, like it she definitely has grown a lot. So this book came out in 2016, and I probably read it in like I probably read it in 2019. So not when it first came out, but before people were like the hype of it. Although when I was reading it, my friend who had read it before me was like, "Oh, is that what you're reading?" And I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Oh my god, it destroyed me." And I was like, because I was in part one still. I was like, I love Ryle. He's the best ever. He's fantastic. But I was only in part one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Same.
Okay. Well, then, so you had a perspective of domestic violence from that lens prior to working here. How is that, how do you think that story sits, book or movie? How do you think it sits in the world of domestic violence, intimate partner violence?
I thought the book did a better job than the movie at displaying it. I feel like the movie was almost like a money grab. And I know Colleen Hoover has had some pushback in the past for this because there actually was an It Ends With Us coloring book after the book went like viral on TikTok. So she released a coloring book that was like all flowers and stuff, like from the floral shop that she owned in there.
Lily Blooms.
Yeah, and everybody was like, this is strange. Like, isn't this supposed to be about domestic violence? It had nothing to do with domestic violence. It was odd. But when I first read the book, I was like, okay, like, I really liked how they talked about her dad. I love my dad, but I did have a very complicated relationship with him, as most people do with their parents, right? And so I really liked that aspect, bringing in the father figure in there. I thought the way that they portrayed his funeral in the book was super powerful. And they kind of dumbed that down and that whole relationship. And then the relationship with her mom is the progress that it shapes through, like, the entire book is really amazing. And the movie pretty much washed that out.
That's almost unfortunate.
Not completely, but...
It was an important theme in the book
It was super important. Like, there was a conversation that was had in the book that I was, like, waiting to see on screen that did not happen. So that was really interesting. And then just overall, like, the abuse that happens is portrayed differently in the movie. And I understand why they did it. I don't want to ruin anything for you now that I know you haven't seen it.
Well, I saw something that don't they kind of... And I know that, you know, given our field, we know that things can get minimized or people can get gaslit and things like that. But aren't there certain creative ways they do in the movie where it kind of makes you question, did he really push her? Did he really shove her?
Well,
do
as,
all these things? And
well, as a person who hasn't read the book, I'm fascinated with exactly those components that you're talking about, Abby, that when I watched it, I couldn't help but think, how in the world did they possibly portray this in the book? Because the imagery in the show was, for our listeners, there's going to be spoiler alerts, right? Spoilers all over the place. But that very first incident around the oven, that looked, from a visual perspective, very accidental. It was like when you have a scene in a movie that it shows something, and then at the end, it kind of goes back and shows from a different angle, like what you didn't see. That's how that first scene was. I literally thought, from that first oven scene, I thought she was super overreacting, and it made no sense to me why she was upset. That didn't present like domestic violence to me. It didn't even present like a red flag to me. It looked seriously accidental.
Yeah, in the book, it was very obvious that abuse was happening, and they were conversations like between her and Ryle saying like, this can't happen again, like trying to work through like, she didn't want to give up on the relationship. She loved him, and this whole part one had been developing him as this super strong, amazing, like, wonderful person. And so now we get that cognitive dissonance in here that's like, but now he's doing this thing that was like what my dad did to my mom. And also that other thing, like, her dad was abusive towards her mom as well. So you're kind of getting that, like, generational trauma in there. So these conversations that she's happening, like, I'm not going to be like my mom. I'm going to have this conversation, and then it would happen again. And kind of the same thing. This can't happen again. Like, this isn't okay. Let's break up. Let's take breaks. And then the book really went into more about, like, him winning her back. And then almost more detailed, like, in the, like, abusive relationship cycle.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I think the
book manipulation and the falling back into the cycle and seeing how all those different stages create that cycle.
Which is why I thought the book did a better job of displaying it as, like, an actual theme rather than just like, this is really scary, we're gonna use this for like the grab of like trauma, which I feel like is almost what the movie was, is we knew that it was gonna be about abusive relationships and that it's controversial and people are gonna talk about it, which is kind of like what the coloring book situation was.
Well, see, and that's where I just don't know which one is the, I don't know if they're just completely different, I guess, responses to him then. Because if the book, if you're reading it and you're getting this concept of domestic violence all throughout, Then it seems to be about a book around intimate partner violence and how that impacts people. Whereas the movie, I think what I like about how the movie did, it was creating the conversation within your own brain about, like, here's what I see. But then, like I said, at the end, then you start to see all those same scenarios, that oven, the situation at, like, when she was went into the one bathroom at the restaurant and went and talked with her friend. From the movie, from the first view of it, it looks like she's lying, being sneaky. And that creates concern from a dating partner. Why are you not telling me the truth? Why aren't you being honest with me? So it kind of puts it on her. But then when you see from the other lens of it, then it starts to answer those questions in your own head. Why I had the bias I did. Why I had. So I kind of like that layout too. Yeah. That it helps create that own bias in your brain as you watch it. And then it confronts your bias at the end.
Except at the beginning of the movie, they did add a line, and it's, she says, "I'm an unreliable narrator." So it's like right away.
Huh.
Yeah, it sets it up.
Right away, it's set up that you can't trust what she's saying or her perspective of it. Which is true, though, like when people have experienced like high amounts of trauma, it's like once they tell you, the next time they tell you what happened, it could be very different than the first time they told you, because really they're just trying to piece together or remember it. But that can be really tricky when you've experienced that level of trauma. But
yeah,
ultimately, it's opened up a deeper conversation of, are people using like themes like violence like this as kind of that wow factor in like new media?
Right. And that's, I think when we were talking about this, when it came out, that was one of the things that I know Caitlin and I had talked about, because like I said, I will admit I like books like this, whether they're the easy read I want them to be and then they take this dark turn or not. But I definitely think Colleen Hoover gets brought up with these things because, you know, she did experience domestic violence growing up, and she said she pulls from those themes for her writing, and that was one originally one of her, like, outlets was writing and talking about these things. However, sometimes it gets taken too far, and we bring back, once again, people profiting off of trauma and things like that, and I don't know. Definitely can be some problems there.
And really, I feel like Colleen Hoover isn't even that bad. And I know that sounds like interesting because we're talking about a book about domestic violence,
right,
but there are some books out there that are so terrible, like talking about like child sexual abuse,
mm-hmm,
or like molestation.
That one book you said you literally couldn't even finish reading.
Oh yeah, Behind Closed Doors. That was so bad.
Yeah.
We read it in October. It was Domestic Violence Awareness Month. I told my friends, I was like, I think we have to pick a different book. But yeah, that one was terrible. And I was like, there was no reason for it to be as bad as it was. There's one book that's often talked about in my book club, and I think it's called Creed, maybe? If I get this wrong, my friend Haley's gonna get on me. But it's a book that I was not able to read. My friend Hannah was not able to read, but I had two other friends, one being my friend Haley, who did read it, did like it, and I was just like, that is wild, because at one point, like, it talks about rape, like, in a, like, a sexual nature. And it's like, should we be sexualizing things like sexual assault and rape?
Yeah.
I know you're looking it up.
Is a book called Creed that talks about sexual assault, attempted rape, sex trafficking.
So it must be that.
Definitely that one.
There you go, you won't get in trouble.
It gets mentioned in like book talk groups on Facebook as well, about people are like, I want something more like this. And I'm like, why? Like, why do you want to read that? But it's not real. So is it like an escapism? But should we be using it for,
right,
yeah, like entertainment value?
Okay, so let's close out the book conversation on that point, and then let that jump into what the next thing that I'm super excited about hearing what you have to say about this. Yeah, so, but let's close out the book conversation then with exactly what you just said. Is it healthy to create content like this that sensationalizes or brings attention, awareness? I mean, what's the good of this or the bad of a book or a movie around this topic?
People were definitely talking about domestic violence.
Definitely.
Definitely talking about it. And even bringing up, like, I feel like society as a whole was digging into research that was more accurate, because they realized that the movie and like the book were not the best place to go for statistics and evidence.
Right. And I think Baldoni.
Yeah, Justin Baldoni.
He, you know, talked a lot during his press conferences about, you know, nonprofits and things like that and websites to go to, and highlighting, you know, he wanted to make this movie to bring up this, these are the signs, these are the things you might not realize can be or are abusive in your relationship, so please take note. So going off what you said, I think that was some good that these things bring.
I think it creates the space to have the conversation.
Right.
Okay, yeah, so I would agree. I think it creates, it increases social consciousness around the concepts of domestic violence, intimate partner violence. And what I think I like about it is, in thinking also about the show with Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon, Big Little Lies, I think the important part of these kinds of shows is, I think they're honest enough that they show that domestic violence, intimate partner violence can be very ambiguous feeling for the victim. It can be very ambiguous for the viewer or the, you know, the friend seeing their person, their, you know, their a loved one go through this. It manifests in very different ways. And I think what's important both in Big Little Lies and in It Ends With Us is that in both of them, it really portrays what stands out to me as the victim having constant feelings of a lack of safety and uncomfortable. So to me, it's irrelevant to what the viewer sees. It's irrelevant. It's about how a person feels. If you don't feel safe, then that's a problem. And I think that that raises the opportunities for question about why doesn't that person feel safe? What's happening there and stuff. So I think it's important for raising social consciousness.
Well, I have a place where I think I know where like the popularity of it all stems from.
Okay.
Trauma dumping.
Okay, so we're gonna transfer over into trauma dumping. What's happening here?
So trauma dumping, basically, anytime that you're talking about anything that's like very traumatic in your life, just like putting that on other people, it's trauma dumping. And listen, I'm Gen Z. Gen Z loves trauma dumping. Was it Gen Alpha, that's one underneath us, they also love trauma dumping. To the point that, like, that's why I think TikTok does so well.
Right.
Not just that. Obviously, there's lots of information you can find on there. Trauma dumping that exists on TikTok is so different. Because Instagram Reels is associated, like, with your profile. Like,
yeah, sure is.
With more, like, who you are every single day. Whereas TikTok, the people that are seeing all that stuff, they don't always know you. Like, it's just like it shows up on your For You page.
Yeah.
So there's this trend going around, and it's like one of the like image sliders. You know what I'm talking about? So
yeah.
You slide into different images.
Yeah.
So currently, it's this little like chicken guy. I'm gonna show you guys a picture. I'll try to describe it for people that are listening. So it's like this chicken guy. Have you guys seen this?
That is not a chicken guy.
Yes, it is.
It is not. He's a little shrimp from the Muppets.
Muppets, that's it.
It's from the Muppets.
That's from the Muppets.
Jim Henson Muppets. He's a little shrimp, and he has like a Cajun accent.
Interesting. He's a shrimp, but he's like Cajun, and he's a cook?
Yeah.
Cannibalism.
Oh, cannibalism. Explain. Our listeners are like...
Boil? Cajun food is shrimp.
Yeah, I know. He's a little...
I think a chicken is less horrific. Okay, so
yeah.
Anyway, he's the
I can't believe you thought he was a chicken. Now I'm really wondering what your animal recognition skills are. We have to, when we return
this is
to
a
our
shrimp.
Office. That is such a little shrimp.
I mean, anybody that's listening to this to go look at that because it does not look like a shrimp.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it's
my
like
gosh.
That's his little feathers. I obviously haven't seen the Muppets.
Oh.
All I know is Manama.
Oh, my. My Jim Henson, like, experience in life is hurting so bad right now.
I know.
Oh, sure enough, Pepe the King Prawn.
Yes. Yeah, it's Pepe.
Interesting.
He's
okay.
A little Cajun shrimp.
The only Pepe I know is Pepe Le Pew. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, apparently it's Pepe the King Shrimp. So
yes.
His face is just, like, so shocked all the time because his eyes look so big. So people are trauma dumping using him. And it's just, like, stories. So one of them... I have a couple that are really good. The really big one right now is the olive oil story. Okay, so if we have our first image here. So it's kind of farther away, right? And it says that one night when I was in high school and I decided to try an olive oil mask for my hair since someone laughed at me and said my hair looked like hay, which is like the beginning of the trauma dumping. So then it's, you know, Pepe Le Prawn, whatever, again. after I soaked my hair in oil, I saran wrapped my head, went down to the garage to get a drink out of the garage fridge. Next one. I put way too much olive oil on. It dripped everywhere. The path became an oil slick. Suddenly, one of our cats jumped out, frightened me, and I went flying on the oil. I slammed into the door and passed out, and it's closer. That's not it, though. I woke up in complete darkness. The lights were on a timer. I panicked. I didn't know where I was. My phone was dead. I tried to stand. My legs were completely asleep, and I was covered in oil. I tried to run to the door. I slammed into so many things. I saw a reenactment of this, like somebody.
That's what I saw, the reenactment. It was, I was so confused. I was so.
So I finally got to the house door. I opened it and set off the house alarm. My family had gone to bed and set it. I tried to type in the code. I didn't because I was so confused. I make my way as fast as I can to my room. As soon as I get upstairs, the full burglar alarm sets. I had never heard it before, which I don't know if you guys have heard that before, like the one here. Because I've set it on, and it's bad. My dad jumps out in front of me, only in his underwear, wielding a titanium baseball bat. We both scream. He's mad. He turns off the alarm. I go to my room, lay down a towel, lay down my saran-wrapped head for slumber. 15 minutes later, I hear a noise coming from the door below. I look out the window, 3 men in all black with flashlights, trying to pick the lock. So now somebody's actually trying to break into the house.
Oh my gosh.
I have to wake up dad again because we're being robbed. Turns out it was the police checking out the alarm trigger. They were already in the neighborhood due to the water line break. My dad was extra mad. By this time, I have to be up in an hour. I don't sleep. I listen to the winter storm outside. My head soaks in the oil. When it's time to wake up, I run to the bathroom to rinse the oil out of my hair. But because the water line is broken, there's no water. I have to go to school with a head of saran-wrapped oil.
Oh, no.
This has 6.9 million likes, which means it has... How many views does this have? 52 million views.
See, now... Man, that's... I'm sorry, but that's one of those where I just... I mean, it's not because I'm bald now, but... I just didn't relate. I've never saran wrapped my head in oil. Never. So I didn't even understand who's
can't
doing
say I
this.
Have either.
Yeah. It was bizarre. So what trend are you talking about? The trauma dumping? The head in oil?
No. So
little
that,
shrimp guy? Like Pepe?
I don't think that was the start of the trend. I think something else started it. But everybody's doing that now. So like when you go to that sound, it's just like tons of people sharing these like very traumatic stories. And they're all getting amazing views, so therefore people feel encouraged to continue trauma dumping on the internet, which I love. It's great entertainment.
Trauma dumping, yes.
Yes.
But some people need to just go to therapy also.
Yes. Like, and then are people now lying? But trauma dumping does so well in social media, and because we are like the social media generation, if you're going to create content, whether that's books or movies or short form content like TikToks, it makes sense to put things in there that are traumatic.
Okay, so why? Why do you think it resonates with people? Why is it popular? Is it trending?
It's just like, you know, what do you
is
see
there value
the news?
In it?
You don't see the you see a few happy stories of this person got reunited or won this thing or oh my gosh. The majority of it is sad, scary things. That's what our brains see as entertaining.
And we love drama.
Yeah. Especially when it's not happening to us.
Yes, we love drama. Like when I was in high school, and you probably had this on in your college campus, Yik Yak.
Right? Yes.
You know what Yik Yak is?
I do not.
Oh boy.
You're missing out. This was my first week of high school. So Yik Yak is a anonymous like posting thing. So it goes based off your location. So if you were within so many miles of a location, you could see what other people in that location were posting on Yik Yak.
And people could like up and down it, right? And comment.
Yes. So it was meant for college campuses. So people on college campuses were like posting Yik Yaks, and it was like funny, like sense of community.
Some stuff, some rumors, some funny things.
Kind of like Gossip Girl.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like your very own little Gossip Girl.
Right.
But like anything, it starts for colleges and then it trickles down into like high school. My first day of high school, this is like when Yik Yak first pretty much came out or like got to the high school level. Somebody was on there and they were like ranking the freshmen. They were trying to like get people to break up with certain people. When people were cheating, they were putting it in there. This is all on the first day. And then my lunch, it was fourth lunch, I'll never forget. I saw one girl read this Yik Yak that her boyfriend was making out with like some other person, and her boyfriend and that person were in the lunch, and all of a sudden this girl just gets up and like runs over there and was like grabbing her by the hair, and everybody was yelling, and everybody could not look away, and they love to be part of it, but like separated from it, like, oh, we saw it going down on Yik Yak.
It's like, you love the car crash, yeah, but you don't want to be a part of the car crash.
It's like you can't look away.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, I mean, in my opinion, the connection between these two topics that we talked about today, it ends with us, and
the generational failures of millennials, Gen Z, and
sure,
Alpha.
Sure.
I'm a millennial.
I said millennial.
Okay.
I guess what I see, like if I had to try to become very philosophical about why any of this, how any of this connects and how it matters, is I come from, I think, probably the very last generation after the boomers that was like, keep everything secret, we don't share our family business, and what that caused, at least from my personal experience and from the people my age that I grew up with and I've seen as we've gone into adulthood and now old adulthood,
older.
Is that that secrecy created a lot of isolation, created a lot of sense of alone, like I'm navigating this alone. When I was a kid, I mean, I didn't have any concept that other kids were going through problems. It felt like it was all me. So I guess my point is, I would think that things like this, shows like this, stories like this, books like this around It Ends With Us, and that concept of trauma dumping, I think it creates a sense, I think we're interested in it generationally because it makes us feel not alone.
I just wish I felt more comfortable trauma dumping on the internet. I'd have so many followers.
You would.
You feel like you could trauma dump a lot?
I could be like the queen of trauma dumping.
She's got some stories.
If only I felt comfortable doing that on the internet.
Yeah, I hear you. I feel the same way. I feel like I could run a whole TikTok series of...
so many of those.
You both
prawns.
Could.
So much. Yeah. But yeah, like, I think...
How do you... I just want to know how people like get past being like embarrassed.
So, hold on. So, and we're going to close out on this. You don't do it because you're embarrassed?
Not really. More like, I guess it's digital footprint is what gets me.
True.
Digital footprint and embarrassment. Those are some considerations you have.
Well, like, once you put it out there to a certain point, you can't retract it from the internet, so that if you have regret or if it involves other people or people know that business about you, you know, you can't undo all that.
I guess I'm not, like, scared of being embarrassed. Like, I feel like I have a lot of embarrassing things on the internet. Like, when I was in middle school, I had a YouTube, and somebody in my class found the YouTube, and they shared it with the whole school. But I was like, look at all my views. So, like,
thanks,
for
guys.
Me, it was a win. But I mean, just like other people, like some of these stories, I'm like, you could not pry that out of me.
Interesting.
Maybe not the olive oil one, but there are some in there. Like, I was reading one where this girl was dating somebody that was involved in human trafficking, and he took her on a vacation to a different country to like recruit people for this human trafficking thing he was doing. And she was I could not pry that out of me. I would not have, like, that's, I feel like she's getting herself in trouble. The police are going to show up at your house.
Interesting. Yeah, because that's not at all my reason why I don't do it. Because I would love to trauma dump and just vocalize my frustrations and my concerns with the world and all that stuff. I would love to. The only reason why I don't do it is because a number of years ago, my family was down in Florida, and I went on a bike ride on the beach. And I made a video, like, while I was riding on the bike, and I was like, I said something in the beginning of the video. I just really wanted it to show, like, my family when I got back to the house, like, hey, look at my bike ride. But in the video, I started out with, like, hey, everyone, right? And when I got back, my family was all like, who's everyone, Roy? Who are you talking to? So I don't do a TikTok. I haven't created a TikTok.
Because your kids would bully you.
Because I'm really just afraid. Like, I'm not at all embarrassed about how I look or come across to people. I just don't want to only have 3 people watching it. If I could have 10 million people watch me make a total, you know, dork of myself, I would love that. I would thrive on that. My problem is I would just end up with 3 followers, and then I would be like, it would be sad, really. So I just don't want to be sad.
That's a generation. generational difference, though, because if I gave my nephew, like, my phone right now, knowing that this video would not be posted anywhere, and I gave, like, set it up for him, he'd be like, hey, what's up, you guys? Welcome to my show. And he knows that I'm the only person that's going to watch this, and he'd still, like, be performing and killing it.
Yeah, see, that's my barrier. Yeah.
He's an iPad baby, like, through, like, has had an iPad since he was two.
Well, I commend the people out there who are brave enough to do the trauma dumping and make these trends popular. Because, again, I really think it's good for helping people feel so much less alone. Yeah, more connected. Yeah.
That's why we should not ban TikTok.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. So.
I choose to think that it's not.
But it is. It is. We'll see. There is another place that people are talking about going
Blue
to.
Sky.
So I've already went to Blue Sky.
But that was for Twitter, though.
And Blue Sky feels very Twitter-like. I'm not super impressed with it. But there's another one they're talking about to go to, and I can't remember the name of it right now. There's some questions about, do we go to another space?
Well, because people want to ban Meta. Not ban Meta. They want to, what's a better word for that?
They
boycott.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They want to boycott Meta.
It's one of those things where all the permissions and what it lets you do and politically and stuff like that,
well,
right?
And Meta buys everything. It's a monopoly.
Right.
And some would argue that the reason why, and this isn't even what we're talking about, some would argue on TikTok that the reason why they think TikTok is being banned is because it isn't owned by Meta. I know they're saying like it's foreign owned, but I mean, lots of people have access in all kinds of different countries to...
Boy, we're going to cliffhanger. It's going to be a cliffhanger here because I'm not going to let you talk any more about that because I think that's another podcast. Yeah.
Tune in next time.
Tune in next time for our perspectives on the value of social media, specifically TikTok, and why it'll be banned. So, okay, take care.